Brandon Fletchell is a senior at Rifle High School, and until a few weeks ago, he had anticipated leaving the country before accruing unlawful presence. Brandon was brought to the United States as a child, and his dream is to serve the country as a military anesthesiologist. For today's Valley Voices, I interview Brandon and his mother, Myrna, about their journey. I understand that you're very involved in your school.
Yep, student body vice president and currently an international baccalaureate diploma candidate. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Congratulations. So what are some of your interests, Brandon?
Well, other than sports, I'd like to, after high school, pursue an education in medicine. And hopefully, if my career allows me, become some type of doctor for the armed services.
And so you recently received DACA, is what my understanding is.
Yes, sir. And it was a great day. I cried and everything. So it was a pretty good day.
And previous to that, you were prepared to leave the country before you turned 18 and a half.
Yes.
Right? And why is that? What is that, the significance of 18 and a half? Why would you have had to leave?
So the United States Immigration at 18 and a half years old considers you to consciously be accumulated unlawful presence. As a minor, you're here with your parents, like not, oh, they consider it you unaware of you being here. Mm-hmm. I guess you could say illegally. But at 18 and a half years of age, they see you as being here consciously. And I would have had to leave because if I would have stayed past that point, I would have accumulated unlawful presence. And I would have been, my I-130, which is a petitioner, a citizen will petition for an undocumented immigrant, saying that they want this person as, like, in their life. For example, my mom, that's the way she got her documentation. And had I stayed past that point, I would have been at risk to lose that. Mm. And currently with the leaders of our government, we were unsure what would happen with DACA and if I would get it in time. And I had another application called the Special Juvenile Immigrant, which is a special status for a child in the United States that's been abandoned, neglected by one of their birth parents. And a judge has already signed it, said that you will get your documentation. But we weren't sure, once again, with our current government leaders, if we were going to have that by the time April 16th came around, which would have been marked 18 and a half years of age. And I would have left for Mexico, so I wouldn't have accumulated any unlawful presence until I got my I-130 appointment and was able to come back. So they wouldn't, so U.S. Immigration wouldn't have a reason to say, you can't come back like they did so with my mom.
Okay.
And also a big reason for that is because, for me, they can't prove this thing called hardship. Hardship is a thing that the United States government looks at the U.S. citizen that's petitioning for the undocumented immigrant. It's saying, what does this undocumented immigrant have to offer our citizen? Why should we let you back in? Mm-hmm. And for me, the only thing that I would have had is, oh, my parents love me so much. Can he please come back? But for example, for my mom, at that time, they had a business together. My father was attending college and things such as that. And he was able to prove hardship for her, so she was able to come back within a year, else they could have kept her down there for up to 10.
So you came to the country when you were 5 years old. You were brought to the United States. To go to Mexico now that you're 18 years old, are you familiar with the culture? Do you have relatives, people that you know? It would sort of be like starting over.
Yes, it would definitely be starting over. I do have family down there, and that's who I was planning to stay with, is one of my mom's sisters. She lives in Baja, California, in a city called Tijuana. But yeah, I mean, I actually came at the age of 4, and I don't know anything other than the United States. I guess I'm American at heart. I'm not really, I guess, you could say,
you have never
Hispanic. I've never been there. I've never grown up there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, I speak the language because I was fortunate enough to speak it with my mom when I was a kid. But other than that, I can't even remember a time where I wasn't with my mom and my current dad, who used to be my stepfather. And I attend high school. I'm involved in football. I'm involved in track. And I don't know anything other than the United States, and sending me back like that would just, I guess you could say I would be lost.
Well, I see you wearing this Harley Davidson, bald eagle, American flag, built with pride t-shirt, and explaining your high school path, and maybe I could see, based on your ancestry and your family and culture, wanting to go to Mexico to live part of that, but it's not necessarily something you're directing your life towards. You're sort of, you at least were being forced previously into that situation without necessarily choosing it. Like
Yes.
You say, you want to go to medical school, you want to be a doctor.
At some point, I would like to go down there and experience it and meet my family and meet my grandparents that I've never known, and just kind of see where, like, I came from, because I don't remember it. But I would like to say, when I'm done experiencing it and knowing what it is, I'd like to have the choice whether I would want to stay down there or come back. And most likely it'd be I'd want to come back and continue my life as, I guess you could say, as an American.
And so I guess the big question is, how did you manage to receive DACA, considering Trump canceled the program?
You got your DACA because you put your application before October 15 when they closed the DACA applications. So your application was there before. It took so long, almost a year to process, or more than a year, but it was before he closed it. That's why you got it.
That's the voice of Myrna Fletchel, Brandon's mother.
All the applications that were in, they had to process this because they were already in. And that's what he wanted to stop. President Trump.
All of it together.
All together, but he couldn't. The Supreme Court didn't allow him to do that. So all the applications that they were in the immigration process already before October 15 to 2017, this past year when he announced it, all those applications had to be processed. But before, or what he wanted to do was to even cancel those also.
So you got your application in before the deadline.
Yeah,
and luckily they finally got around to processing it before you had to leave the country.
Yeah.
Very close.
2 weeks.
Two weeks before I had to leave.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So it just kind of sort of was like, all my family, we got together in Buena Vista, and we were sitting in my aunt's kitchen, and my mom was like, well, kind of brought us all in there and getting ready. Like, she started out the announcement saying, well, guys, we're here celebrating Brandon's early graduation, and like just
goodbye
went
party.
Goodbye party, and just there, like for a second, it just kind of sunk in that I was gonna have to leave in 2 weeks. And like when she said that, I just kind of like put my head down, like, yeah, like I'm gonna have to leave soon. And then I was sitting there like with my head down, like at a chair, like behind my aunt, and just thinking. And then she just kind of spring that news, and I looked up just so happy, and I went to hug her, and like I said, I started crying in front of all my family. And I'm not the typical guy that would like necessarily cry. I mean, football player, and I mean, I've kind of been growing up with a tough motorcyclist dad. You're not really gonna cry, but that really, it was a big relief. The weight that had been lifted off my shoulders was just crazy. It was awesome. And even though we still have a few more steps to go, I still feel like I have some breathing room. And it's like, I felt like I was trapped in this box, and finally, like, I wasn't able to drive. I wasn't able to do any of that stuff. I wasn't able to work. So I'd always be like, hey, mom, can I have like $10 to go to the movies with my friends? And she'd be like, yeah, I guess, just because you can't work. And and then I'd have to ask her to pick me up from school. And then she'd be like, yeah. And then some days it was just, yeah. And some days I'd just wait at school for a long time, just, yeah. But, yeah, finally I'm going to be able to drive soon and then go get a job right away.
And it's crazy to think right now, think about that. Even with him with DACA, now that he's graduating and all that stuff, I mean, he can go to colleges and there's some scholarships for DACA kids, but not that many. But did you know that even people with DACA cannot join the military?
No,
they cannot. He can get a job. He can get a driver's license now. He got his social security number and everything. But when he contacted the military to see if he can enroll to the military and go with them and try to get his college degree with the Army also, because that was one of the dreams that Brandon always had, they said, no, you cannot enroll with us with DACA. You will have to be an American citizen or a resident alien. And even though that he have the DACA and he have a breathing room, we can say his life still on pause, on a pending pause, mm-hmm. because he cannot go to college. Since he got the DACA so late, he was not able to apply to scholarships. So a lot of scholarships are gone already. They're already closed. They're already processed. It's almost time to go to college. The school is almost over. So he was not able to do a lot of applications because he got it so late. And then also, he's not able to get FAFSA either. So even if he wants to go to college right now, tomorrow, or when he graduates, he's not going to be able to go mm-hmm. because he don't got a scholarship. I can definitely not afford a tuition college for him. And he's not able to get FAFSA also.
Mm-hmm.
So his life is still in a pending mode, even with the DACA.
Well, having received DACA probably really like the latest possible, how long will you have that temporary status?
I will have that temporary status for 2 years. But yeah, like she said, I think for either this upcoming year, this whole summer, I think I'm just going to start and begin to work, and as soon as I get my documentation, if I can't join my residency, if I can't somehow head to college, I don't know exactly what my plan is right now.
What's your plan for getting residency? What's the next step in your process?
So currently we are waiting for my I-130 appointment, which is me and my younger brother would have to head down to Mexico to the city of Juarez and go through an appointment where U.S. Immigration will ask us questions and pretty much practically interview us and tell us.
The I-130, it's a relative petition, a petition for a relative. So in this case, his dad, which is an American citizen, petitioned for him. Mm-hmm. And that's the other process that we have this process on. Immigration for 4 years, I would say. Around 4 years is that process in place and waiting for an appointment. So hopefully we'll get that appointment soon for him to go to Juarez and complete that.
So do you think these next 2 years are going to be really focused around just trying to get that residency and then you can move on with your dreams?
Yes, we're hoping that soon we'll get the appointment, and as soon as we get the appointment, we're going to head straight to Mexico and get that taken care of because that's top priority, and when I come back, I'll be joining the military.
Brandon Fletchell is a senior at Rifle High School, and until a few weeks ago, he had anticipated leaving the country before accruing unlawful presence. Brandon was brought to the United States as a child, and his dream is to serve the country as a military anesthesiologist. Can you tell me about that dream? What is it that makes you want to serve?
So, my uncle currently is an anesthesiologist, and I have always been fond of science and chemistry and biology. I mean, they're my favorite subjects at school. I'm going to be honest, if I could go to school just for mathematics and science, I would love to do that. I would put aside literature and history, but I still like those classes, don't get me wrong. But my uncle inspired me to become an anesthesiologist, and because he's the guy that puts people to sleep and is responsible for their safety while they're undergoing surgery, And I always thought about that. And I had always, my dad, who also used to be in the Army, used to tell me that the Army was the way to go. And anytime I see an Army person in the streets or in, like, let's say he walks into the restaurant that I'm eating at, he just stands out from everybody else because he's just, I feel like as an Army person, you're, level, like the level of respect you should have for those people is just at a different level than your normal citizen. And I've always just honored what they do for us, not just the people that go overseas and are combat soldiers, but even the people here in the homeland. And I'd always wanted to be an anesthesiologist for combat veterans that had just gotten shot and saved and had been brought back to base and need immediate surgery, and they need an anesthesiologist right there on call for those veterans that are, their lives are at risk right then and there, that have just taken a couple bullets to the chest or a bullet to the side or to the arm that just needs to be. And I want to make sure that I'm there doing everything I can to save those people, because if they're risking their lives for me, the least I could do is do everything I can to save theirs. So that's always what I wanted to do. When I turned 15, I wanted to go get my permit, and that's when reality kicked in that I didn't think I was ever going to be able to do that. It just seemed like it was such a high dream that would just never happen.
Could you talk to your experience of visiting Congress with Ross Brooks, the CEO of Mountain Family Health?
So Ross Brooks and Mountain Family was kind enough to take me to Washington, D.C. and speak to Senator Gardner, Senator Bennett, Representative Polis, and Representative Tipton. And I got to tell my personal story to Senator Gardner. Senator Gardner was, I hate to say this over the radio, but was by far the most impressive, most inviting, most my favorite of the representatives that I met. He was the most inviting. When he would look at you, you would just feel like he didn't really care who it was he was looking at. He would give his full undivided attention, and if you were talking, it was just on you. And then once you finished speaking, it seemed like whatever you said, he somehow listened to it 100% and had a great answer to come back. And he was just by far the most supportive and probably the best one that I went to the most.
And did you tell them about your dreams of joining the military?
Yes. I mentioned to Senator Gardner, since I only had a few minutes to speak with him, I kind of gave him a background that I'm undocumented. I want to join the armed services. I want to be in the medical field for armed services. And then I asked him if he could provide a more reasonable path for citizenship and residency or documentation for undocumented immigrants such as myself, my mom, and anybody else out there. Because just going back to when my mom began her immigration, it's been 9 years for our family, including her and my brother and I, that we've been working on this, and it's just impossible. Like, for example, for DACA, they wanted us to prove that I was here from what days?
July 2007 to August 2007.
And it wasn't enough proof that I was in school the year before and the year after. They had to have something in there, in the summer.
Oh, wow.
And back then, I wasn't old enough to get a license. I wasn't old enough to go. I don't think I was getting any like medical shots or anything. I mean, I was seven. Mm-hmm. At the most, I was seven.
You found proof though.
We, one of our old pastors had to make a letter saying that they attended our church during this time, Sunday school during that summer, and that was enough.
Yeah, it's crazy because we didn't go to church at that time, or we didn't went to church at that time, then we wouldn't have
anything.
You know what I mean? I'm wondering how many people you can ask, American citizens or not, show me proof for your kids in 2007. How many can they prove this?
Right. Do you mind if I ask you a question,
Sure.
Myrna?
Sure.
So often when I report on immigration, the feedback that I get from some people is like, but what is it that, you know, motivated the parents to bring their kids into that situation? In your personal experience, what inspired you to leave Mexico and cross illegally and bring your children with you?
We really don't know the big consequences that you're going to get once you cross the border illegally and all these things happening. I mean, yeah, I'm sure that most of them don't think of this. Yes, they know. We know. I knew there was something wrong that I was doing to cross the border. But I was just focusing in a dream on a better future for my family, for my kids, that we didn't have in Mexico, and you would never have those opportunities out there. We were talking about it, Brandon and I, for example, on my family. He's going to be the first one graduating from high school. So that could give you a little bit of an idea of how life is down there. And I think when you get full of courage and you said, I'm going to move, and you sell the last piece of property that you have to save some money to cross the border illegally, that's tough. I know that it's wrong. I know I can see that. But at the same time, I see what people are coming here to look for. It's just a better opportunity for their families. I didn't even graduate from middle school.
And so you're so focused on what you want to realize for you and your family that you're not really thinking about the consequences. And it's not easy to know what those consequences are specifically, like how hard once you are here it is to actually obtain legal status.
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, you don't know until you get here. You realize how hard it is to fix that mistake that you did. But at the same time, I will say it's easier this way than staying in Mexico.
Even with all the consequences, it's worth it.
It's worth it.
And would you say it's the economic advantage, or is there a level of like it being not safe in Mexico, or culturally, the way this country is?
I think it's all together. It's economics, it's culturally, it's the opportunities that you have. As a woman, you get less opportunities down there, less opportunity to speak up if you want to say something. I have to say, this country is amazing. The people is amazing. I have met, I'm not saying there's no good people in Mexico. They are good people in Mexico, and so many, that's why they come here, looking for a better opportunity for their families. And so many others, I bet they want to be here. I wish we can go and fix Mexico or fix the structure that we have down there. It's just pretty quite different, I will say, hard to fix. I want to say thank you so much to my family. Thank you so much to Russ and one of those amazing, great people that I have met in this country. I will say is, I could see the pain what Brandon had to go to Mexico on their eyes and on their hearts. And I appreciate that. And I know a lot of my friends, they were hurting for us. They couldn't believe it. Some of them, they're like, how's that possible? If Brandon's dad is an American citizen and you're a resident. And I think that this is, we're using this opportunity to make conscious out there to people of what really is going on. It's not that all those undocumented are on their houses, sitting on the living room, don't wanted it to go fix their papers. It's not that easy. It takes years. It takes money. It takes knowledge also to know if your lawyer is doing what they're supposed to or not, or if they're just taking your money. So it's a hard path. It's really complicated, and a lot of people don't even have the option. Brandon has American citizen dad, I'm resident as a mom, and still took him 4 years, and we still not done.
I'd like to thank my mom for doing, I know even though it was wrong, for doing what she did and just giving me a better life. Like I said earlier, kind of in the background of what she was saying and letting me come up here and see what the American dream really is for a kid that's mom dropped out in middle school and whose biological dad didn't even attend high school to be the first person to graduate high school and on the path to perhaps go to college was just amazing, and I would have never accomplished it down there in the living conditions that Mexico provides for a lot of its citizens. But I'd like to thank my dad first for doing that, and then I'd like to thank Mountain Family and Ross. If you hear this, it really meant a lot, just that extra step that you took for me. There's a lot of people that helped and sympathized for me, but nobody just said, hey, let me take that extra step. And as a stranger and a person, just an acquaintance, it was just great. And it just, you're the person that I guess gives me hope that there's still good in this world. And that was really life-changing, so thank you for that. And that's about all I have to say.
You've been listening to a conversation with Brandon Fletchell, a senior at Rifle High School who received deferred action for childhood arrivals after visiting Washington, D.C. with Mountain Family Health CEO Ross Brooks. For today's Valley Voices, I'm Raleigh Burley.